Isn't it annoying how you can remember things that annoy you, but when you want to remember something, it just disappears out of your mind into the pit of forgetfulness, a common thing of life. But what sticks, like that annoying little tune that you really can't stand but stays in your head all day long? Or sometimes it's a comment, it's just plain ignorance, and you think, ugh! But it stays there, you can't get rid of it. I find a book, Dan Brown's Da Vinci Code, and the film that came from it, extremely annoying. And one particular bit of, it's only a tiny little bit, but annoying dialogue that has stuck in my head ever since I read it about a decade ago. In it, one protagonist happens to mention Mary Magdalene, and the other says, "Oh, you mean the prostitute?" And I was listening on and expecting that to be corrected, but it doesn't. Although actually there's not a shred of evidence that Mary Magdalene ever was a prostitute. I'd love to level all the blame for this travesty on Dan Brown, but actually he didn't make it up. Don't think he's quite that original, but anyway. It is a widely held misconception. Blame, in fact, should possibly go back to Pope Gregory I, known as the Great, back in the 6th century, because he decreed that Mary Magdalene was the same as the woman of ill repute, who is mentioned in Luke chapter 7, who let her hair down at Simon the Pharisee's dinner party and wiped Jesus' feet. And he also said this is the same as Mary, sister of Martha, who lived in Bethany and who broke the jar of perfume on Jesus' feet, recorded in John chapter 12. But there's simply nothing in the Bible to make those connections, to say those are the same people. Or for the subsequent stories that have grown up that really are just fantasies. I mean, some people suggested that Mary was Jesus' wife or lover or Last Temptation, to name another film. Actually, if you want to see it in film, this year's feature film, Mary Magdalene, came out just before Easter, was a great deal better. It certainly rejected all the wilder fancies. And give some ideas of the sort of background and context, although I think there were still some misleading things in there, but that's a bit more technical, so I won't go into that now. So what do we know about Mary Magdalene? What does the Bible tell us? Well, first of all, her name, Magdalene, we think almost certainly means that she came from the town of Magdala, which is in Galilee, hence the difference. Mary of Bethany came from Bethany, and that's in Judea. Magdala is in Galilee, so they're a long way apart. Luke's gospel records that she had been possessed by 7 demons and that Jesus healed her. It doesn't give the story of how, just says it happened. And she clearly continued to follow Jesus from Galilee and on into Judea. In Luke chapter 8, we are told that she was one of several women who supported the Jesus group out of their own means, which implies that she was a woman of some means, if she had something to share there. At the crucifixion, all the Gospels record her to be amongst the women who stayed near the cross right until the end and watched as Jesus was buried. And then comes her moment, as we heard in our gospel reading today, early on the first day of the week, either alone, as in John's gospel, or with others, as the other gospels. She heads back to the tomb and finds the stone rolled away and Jesus' body gone. She is the first with the news. She's back at the house and telling Peter and John, they have taken the Lord away and we don't know where they've put him. So they run and she follows. They see what she's seen. They go back, but she stays. She looks inside and sees angels, angels that hadn't been visible moments before. And then seeing someone behind her, she turns. Is it the gardener? Is it someone who might know something? Mary, he says, it's him, alive. She wants to hug him and hold him and never let go of him again. But he says, don't cling to me. Go and tell my brothers, I am returning to my God and your God. So a second time, she goes to the house with news. I have seen the Lord. Mary, what's most important about Mary is that she is the messenger, the sent one, or the word literally means the apostle. In fact, she is the apostle to those who would become apostles, sent out into the rest of the world. So what can we learn from Mary Magdalene? Well, I think back over those sort of three stages and elements in the story that I've mentioned. First of all, about her healing, that we're told she had seven demons. Many nowadays would interpret this as mental illness. But whether the demons are literal or figuratively, bearing in mind the crude and unpleasant way that people speak, I guess she'd be thought of, spoken of as the mad woman. Keep her over there a bit. We don't know quite what will come out of her mouth if she starts speaking. We don't know what's happened. So, okay, we know her. Maybe most of the time she's fine, but just be careful. So she's always on the outside, the edge of people's society. But Jesus accepted her and healed her. Two things as one, really. Not only freeing her from the horrendous battle going on in her head, but drawing her into the fellowship of his followers. She was included. Jesus included her in the family of faith. And she knew what a privilege that was. Those of us who've been in the church a long time, perhaps all our lives, can so easily forget that it's a privilege. We can take it for granted that we have received the love and forgiveness of God, and that we have been given a place within the Christian community. As Paul reminds us in Ephesians, the other reading we had, no one should take this for granted. Without what Jesus has done, we would be isolated, cut off from one another and from God. And to be without God is to be without hope in our lives. Christ's sacrificial death and resurrection has changed everything. We are included in the family of faith. We are made one with Christians all over the world. We are given life and hope. Mary Magdalene reminds us of the sheer wonder of it all. Secondly, Mary became a disciple. She was not named as one of the 12. And often people think, disciples, that's just the 12. There's 12 men. But actually, there is this group of women that's mentioned as well. It's not meant to be limited to that small group. She did what disciples do. She stuck around with Jesus. She listened to everything Jesus said. She moved on with him. She followed in his footsteps. She learned. She obeyed. And amongst those things, each individual disciple thinks what they can most contribute. And we learned that Mary was able to contribute with money, with resources, something that would support the group together. Sometimes we can think discipleship is for other people, for church leaders, for bishops or some. Well, they are, of course, but not only. Or it's just, oh, for the enthusiasts, I don't want to be too enthusiastic about this. Or super spiritual, I don't want to set myself up above others. It's not above others. But if we call ourselves Christians, so bear the name of Christ, then we are called onto the path of discipleship. That's what he says to each of us. Continually to follow, to learn, to give, and to go in his name. Not normally spectacular. Most of the time we are, as it were, the unnamed ones, not the 12, as it were, with given the prominence. It's not spectacular most of the time. It's getting on with doing the right thing. Our names will not always be the ones in lights. But it is the way of Christ, for which he has given his all. If Mary can, so can we. Thirdly, there's Easter morning, Mary's moment. It begins by her continuing to have the desire to do the right thing, bringing the spices to anoint Jesus' body. But then the totally unexpected happens. The stone rolled away, the body gone. So how does she respond to this? According to Mark's gospel, which just groups the women together, said they ran away afraid. But John's picked out a detail. Mary didn't just run away. She ran specifically to the house where others were to pass on the message, to tell them this has happened, to give the news. And then, having returned to the garden and lingering there, she was the one who first encountered the risen Jesus. And she took that news too. Though it must have been, you know, this do not cling to me, this I'm returning to my Father. Very confusing. But she took the news again. As I was imagining this, I thought, she must surely have had confusion as well. In that she must have wondered if she was seeing things. Jesus risen, a man she didn't recognize, and then recognizing. So there must have been maybe even a fear deep down that the demons had come back, that her head had gone wrong again. She certainly, I think, would have thought, other people will say that. They'll say, oh, well, it's just the mad woman with her fantasies again. But any of those thoughts, or none of those thoughts, stopped her. She just got on with it. She went and told. We can be tempted to feel that we've got to know everything, to understand all mysteries, to have all the answers before we tell anyone what we know about Jesus. We can hold back because we think they're so much more clever. Oh, they'll have all the answers, or they'll just think us mad. Mary reminds us to get on with it anyway. So Mary Magdalene may have had this reputation that was undeserved, and people think, oh, it's a bit salacious, so we'll think about that. But actually, that's not the important thing. What we're told is the important thing. Mary Magdalene was truly healed, included in the community, and had her life renewed. She was a true disciple, growing, learning, and giving. She was a woman with her particular moment in history. A great title, Apostle to the Apostles. And through that act, in time, the whole world would be changed. Let us go and do likewise. Amen.